Welcome to the show. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach and your host. And welcome to It's Your Money, the financial podcast that pulls back the curtain on the industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. We believe that education plus clarity can lead to confidence, and that can result in peace of mind. I do not believe there is a lack of information in our country in this technological age of advancement that we all live in today, but there is a blatant lack of clarity. And hopefully, we are going to bring common sense to the table as it relates to investing in the way this very lucrative and what seems to be complex industry before us can do to us or for us, I guess, depending on whether you're paying the fees or making the money or what your portfolios are doing. Welcome again. I am attempting every week to give you a market update. We're going to do that every week, and you're starting to see that trend, hopefully. This is a market update for November 8th. I endeavor to give a market update so that people can get a well-rounded view of what the market has done year to date, with the intention of trying to stress to people the importance of applying an academic and scientific approach to investing. We believe that there are 50 years of academic research and science from many notable universities and academic institutions around the country and around the world. And most notably, I should say, would be the University of Chicago, which has been the home of more Nobel laureates in the area of economics and finance than any other institution in the world. You know, for many years being a registered investment advisor and working for a large institution and following the advice that that institution's research department and et cetera, had encouraged us to pursue for our clients, I would have okay returns, I mean, but not nearly what I thought the published returns should be for most portfolios. And after many years of distress, and I would say some sleepless nights along the way, I started realizing maybe I'm part of the problem and not part of the solution. And I started realizing that, hey, maybe there's some people out there that look at things differently. And there are. It's a smaller group, but it is a growing group of professionals that are deeply concerned about the direction of our country. Of course, we are post-election week here. The last week was the election, and there was a huge and dramatic wave or shift of thinking in our country. I think that became very obvious in the election results. And we're going to give the other team a try and see what they do, and hopefully they're going to do better than the previous team. Or maybe this might be, and I'm very optimistic and hopeful, this might be an opportunity for the two teams to come together and say, hey, listen, we're on the same boat here. Let's get this puppy turned around. Now, we realize you can turn a rowboat around pretty quickly, but it takes a Titanic a little while to turn around. But we need to quit with all the, if I may go on a quick rant, all the political mumbo-jumbo and focus on the 11th commandment and practice it. And that commandment is, thou shall not fake thyself out. And these guys and gals need to quit faking themselves out because they're not faking the American people out anymore. And let's get back on track. But back to the matter at hand, which is financial literacy. And an application of science and academia to investing. Let's talk a little bit about the market update. First of all, let me express my philosophy and view as it relates to investing in the market. First of all, I don't believe you should have any money in the market that you're going to need for income. That is, if you're retired or on the crest of retirement, that in fact, the traditional view of retirement planning I would be opposed to. That is keeping all your money in the market in a risk-prepared portfolio and then pulling an income stream off of that. I think it's haphazard. I think that I don't think it makes sense, and I don't think that the numbers prove out when you look at traditional income planning where we take the money out of the market, develop guaranteed income streams, and only the money in the market is the only money that should be subject to risk because we're trying to get higher yields. Income accounts, ladies and gentlemen, have different characteristics than accumulation accounts. Why would we use one account for everything? So with that being said, if we're going to focus solely on the market, and that is the money we have in the market, then I think that it's important to apply a scientific approach, which would include three components. Component number one, modern portfolio theory, which was developed by 1990 Nobel Prize winner Harry Markowitz. The underpinnings of modern portfolio theory are that portfolio risk can be reduced by holding various asset classes that have dissimilar price movement. Example, umbrella companies and sunscreen companies. You never know which one's going to be up, but they move opposite each other. Second component, in very simple and generic terms, would be the three-factor model. That is, that basically we understand where 97% of the returns come from in historical investing, and we're going to capitalize on those three factors, one being the market factor, which is a mix of stocks and bonds in the portfolio. Fixed investments have lower yield than equities, but equities have a higher rate of return than fixed investments. We also need to understand the size factor, that small companies have historically returned higher yields than large companies, but they're riskier than large. And value companies. Value companies have historically provided a higher rate of return over growth companies, but value companies are riskier than growth companies. So the three-factor model compiled or merged with the concept of modern portfolio theory and dissimilar price movement, and that all basically laid on the foundation of efficient market hypothesis, which is basically the concept that free markets will dictate supply and demand, and that the market is efficient, that all the unknowable information, all information is factored in the price of a security, and only new and unknowable information would in fact change that. And then when we stick to an adhered, rigid application of portfolio rebalancing and eliminating all the speculation, stock trading, market timing, and track record investing, we have an academic approach to investing. And if we believe in an efficient market and an academic approach to investing, which I do, IR, if you will, then we should understand that it's important to see what the market every week or so looks like year to date, and not just what they show on TV, the Dow and the S&P, because that's only representative of U.S. large predominant companies, but rather the entire marketplace. Because if we're going to practice modern portfolio theory and dissimilar price movement in the three-factor model and efficient market hypothesis, we want to own the entire marketplace, a very broad-based, diversified portfolio. We never know what's going to be up. We never know what's going to be down. We want to own the entire marketplace because we're not trying to beat the market. We want to simply get what the market will bear. And some years, ladies and gentlemen, it's a bear market. But we've got to understand that the market historically is up 2 out of every 3 years. And when you start to look at it, it is the most incredible wealth-producing entity known to man. That is the free capital, the free market capitalist society, when you look at wealth generation and the market as a whole. The market's like going up a flight of stairs with the yo-yo. Now, I know some of you, maybe most of you, have not felt the true effects of market, and that's because of the nature of traditional planning, active management, stock picking, market timing, track record investing, the whole illusion, the whole implication that, in fact, somebody can, with some certainty and predictability, call market movement, when, in fact, there's no one that has, there's no one that can, and, in fact, if they could, what would their motivation be for telling you? So, with that being said, what is the market doing as of November 8th, 2010, which is roughly a couple years, a couple months after the debacle in 2008? 09, of course, was up. But let's look at where we are this year so far, November 8th, market close. Russell 2500 Index, which measures the performance of small to mid-cap companies of the U.S. equity universe, or what we refer to as U.S. small growth, is almost 20%, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, almost 20% up this year. Now, on a sad note, most of you out there that are not applying an academic approach don't own much small at all. Russell 2000 Index, which measures small to very small or micro, is up 19%. When we jump to small value, or the Russell 2000 Index, which would measure performance of small cap value, we see 17%+ in that asset class. Man, this is exciting, isn't it? It's so exciting when we get double-digit returns up. You know, I know you all love volatility, don't you? when the market's up, right? We don't like 2008s. But again, here we go is a perfect example. The year's not over yet, but in the last 3 years, 08, 9, and 10, we've had 2 years up and 1 year down. Russell 1000 value, that measures large U.S. value companies. That's 11.2%, ladies and gentlemen, so that's doing good. In fact, touchdown, we actually have broken into double digits in the large U.S. value and large growth area of the United States. The S&P is up 11.5% year to date. When we jump over to international, what we have is the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index, which is an index that is designed to measure the equity performance of developed markets. For example, Australia, Belgium, Denmark, Germany, Greece, Hong Kong, Ireland, Italy, Japan, Netherlands, Sweden, Spain, Switzerland, United Kingdom, etc. Developed markets. And developed markets year to date, November 8th, 2010, would be just shy of 8%. But when we go on to emerging markets, which is measured by the Morgan Stanley Capital International Emerging Markets Index, which would look at markets like Argentina, China, Colombia, Egypt, Hungary, India, Morocco, Philippines, Poland, Russia, South Africa, Thailand, to name a few, we're up 16.5 plus. Yay, team, go emerging markets. And then when we end up with our lowest and lagging asset class, ladies and gentlemen, that being the Morgan Stanley Capital International, Europe, Australia, and the Far East, we are basically, that would be, by the way, be a index that is designed to measure the equity performance of developed markets, excluding U.S. and Canada. So that would be North America, I guess. It would be excluding North America. But at this point, we're 5.25 up. So when we look at the market as a whole, and I hope you own all these asset classes, because you never know what's going to be up. I hope you're not just chasing bonds like most of the industry is doing this year, like they did last year with international. But I hope you own everything and rebalancing. Ladies and gentlemen, you should be very happy campers. The vast majority of you should be back in the black after 08, based on the returns that we had last year and this year. With rebalancing and locking in gains, not chasing the market, keeping an institutional portfolio with low, very low turnover and super no-load funds, very low pricing, you should be excited, turned on. If you don't have that, you need to get hooked up with an academic investor around the country, around the world. If you don't know how to do that, contact us and we'll get you in touch with somebody in your area. As simply a public service. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. You're listening to It's Your Money, the financial podcast that pulls back the curtain on the financial industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. And that would be the conclusion of my market update as of November 8th, 2010. Let me spend a couple minutes with you, ladies and gentlemen, if I may, talking a little bit about share classes. Now, the best share classes, I think, would be iShares. Those would be institutional shares. But a lot of people don't understand what a share class is. And I like the analogy, and these would be share classes for mutual funds, for example, okay? I like the analogy of walking into a house when explaining share classes to investors. Each house varies on how you pay for the visit, okay? The typical share classes are as follows. With A shares, an investor pays an upfront fee to walk into the front door. That fee generally averages around 4.5% of the amount invested. If you invested $10,000, the fee is $450 to get in the house. As the amount invested increases, there are typically what they call breakpoints that allow the fees to be decreased, okay? And then management fees are charged in addition. So you have an upfront fee to get in, and there's a management fee. That's normally about 1.5% to stay in the house. Now, that would be annually. Now you have, that's A shares. B shares are awfully wrongly touted by brokers as no-load funds. The reason is that they don't have a front-end fee deducted from the account when the money is deposited. In other words, there's no fee to walk in the house. In exchange for this, the fund charges a higher management fee. This is generally around 70 basis points or 0.7%. For those of you who have not heard the term basis points, it's an easy way to understand breaking up 1%. 1% is 100 basis points, 50 basis points, 0.5%. So, for example, when the Fed lowers or increases interest rates by 25 basis points, they mean 0.25%. So, the fee is generally around 70 basis points or 0.7%, and that's on top of the annual expense fee, which is about 1.5%. So now you're right around 2% for a B share. Okay, and so there's a higher management fee and there's back-end fees when you get out if you don't have it for so many years. There's normally a decreasing scale, a redemption fee. You might have heard that term before. That would be a B share. So it's a no load, but you're paying a higher management fee along the way and then a redemption or backload fee. The third type of share class, which is really called a C share, they're like B shares, but this class allows 100% of the investor's money to go to work right away. However, if the investor decides to leave, the back-end fee is generally much less than the ongoing management fee comparable to B shares. So the management fee is normally lower than B shares, but there might be a little bit higher fee to get out the back door. True no-load funds are the fourth most common alternative. With this alternative, the advisor does not get paid by the fund company. Rather, the advisor charges a fee directly to the investor. I personally prefer this agreement because it's the most transparent alternative. Nothing's hidden. And in my opinion, commissions and hidden expenses can be a problem for several reasons. There's often incentive to do something when nothing's really the right thing to do. I think that was a lot of the case of 08. There's an incentive to offer products that pay higher fees to the advisor. There's an incentive to recommend when the investor would buy rather when they really need to do something. So sometimes there can be a conflict of interest. Of course, most advisors rise above this morally, but there is the person along the line that doesn't, that, of course, hopefully gets snagged along the way. But anyway, I just wanted to talk a little bit about share classes. We may have opportunities to talk more about this. I think some important questions you need to ask advisors when they are making recommendations. One would be, what's the share class? A, B, C, or no load, truly, a flat fee. Why are you recommending the fund? This is a trick question. If they say anything related to performance history, then you just need to get away, in my opinion, because that's market timing and it doesn't work. I'm sorry, track record investing. How often do you rebalance a portfolio? It's absolutely critical. How do you manage the taxes on these funds? So we have different issues that we're dealing with when you start to get recommendations from advisors. I encourage that you take the time to get educated. There's sources of information out there, whether they be our podcast, whether it be, there's all kinds of material out there. But check out our website, by the way. That's a great place to start, financialabundanceinc.com. Or you can go to Google and type in Financial Abundance. We have roughly about 3 years of my syndicated radio show prior to me retiring from doing that. Now it's a weekly podcast. We have about a year's worth of video clips from coaching that we did for the NBC news broadcast here in Central PA. And there's a number of blogs and other things that we've written. So there's a plethora. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I threw in the word plethora today of information available to you. And with that, I think I'm going to conclude today's podcast. I hope this finds you well. Check it out, financialabundanceinc.com. If you have any questions, you can click right on there, ask the coach a question, and I will respond as promptly as possible. Once again, I hope this short time with me has enriched your life in some way, and I encourage you to get education. Get educated. Education leads to clarity. Clarity, confidence. Confidence can result in peace of mind. You don't need to know everything. You just need to know the few right things. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I hope this finds you well. Have a super day. We'll talk to you next week.